Welcome to Building Fortunes Radio. Make sure you check us out at buildingfortunesradio.com. Along with our marketing partners, we're here to help our PM Marketing Network Lead customers build their businesses and make the world a better place. At Building Fortunes, we know how much your business means to you and the people important to you. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world. Now on to our show with your host, Peter Mingles.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. I'm going to date today because it's November 13th, 2021. It's 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 7:30 p.m. Central Time for anybody that might be listening in. And we are here every Saturday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 7:30 p.m. Central Time. This is actually Scott Johnson's radio show on Building Fortunes Radio. A while back, I did a radio show with an MLM critic whose name is still Roger Van Vlissingen. And Roger Van Vlissingen used to write, or maybe even still writes, occasionally for a website called Seeking Alpha. And Roger Van Vlissingen is pretty much as anti-MLM, I think, as anybody can be. But Roger's a pretty smart dude. He was writing some pretty interesting articles, and he had some very good criticism about Herbalife and Vima at the time, and Vima had just temporarily been shut down. I reached out to him, and I said, listen, you have some very interesting views. I'd like to have you on the radio show. And he did, and he brought with him a gentleman named E. Robert Smith, who's also another author. I think he wrote a book called Downline. We'll give him a little bit of publicity there. They're both good guys, and they had very interesting conversations. So I did a radio show with Roger, and then Scott Johnson called me up shortly after that, and he said, Peter, I listened to that one, but there's something that a lot of people are not talking about. And I said, what that, Scott? And he said, it's the tool scam. So I didn't know what Scott meant by the tools scam. So I asked him, and we started talking a little bit, and one of the things I asked him about the tool scam was if he had a website, and he told me, yes, I do, and you might want to write this down. It's called stoptheamwaytoolscam.wordpress.com. So stoptheamwaytoolscam.wordpress.com, and that's when I knew that he was talking about the same thing that I was talking about or thinking about relative to tools. See, I hired and fired myself three separate times with Amway, mostly because they were focused on the downlines or the uplines that I was hooked up with. They were mostly just really hooked up on me recruiting and making a list of all the people that I knew. And because of my direct sales background, recruiting was never going to be a problem for me. See, I was recruiting people to sell vacuum cleaners door-to-door on commission only. So I didn't think I'd have too much of a hard time getting either part-time people or full-time people to pursue their dreams through a home-based business. So recruiting wasn't an issue for me. I wanted more like product knowledge and other stuff like that. But they kept pushing books and tapes and functions and kept on pushing this cult-like philosophy of, you know, if you're 99% loyal to the system, you're 100% disloyal. I said, that sounds kind of weird. And they wanted to go through my house and make sure every product that I had was an Amway product. And I said, well, that's kind of weird. And they kept on saying things like, if you miss a function, you won't be successful. And I said, well, that doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, what's wrong with you people? So I hired and fired myself three separate times. And I knew then when Scott mentioned his website that he was talking about the same thing that I was talking about. So we started this radio show, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago, right after that. It was around Labor Day, if you will, that we had our conversation, I think, the next weekend after that. We did that. So it's been 6 or 7 years, and we've done this radio show on Saturdays right at this time for as long as I can remember. And if you listen in to enough of these radio shows, you'll be able to hear just about everything you need to know about the good parts, the bad parts, the stuff that you need to focus on. And we've had conversations with guests. We've had conversations with people that are, you know, not necessarily attached to network marketing and let's call it different types of business models, everything from child sex trafficking, believe it or not, to stuff like Scientology, to a whole bunch of other things as well. And this has been a really great radio show for me for research and development as well. And occasionally we even pick on some people as well. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on during the radio show too. But Scott Johnson, thanks for being here on your own radio show.
Hey, Peter, thanks for having me. You know, it's interesting when you were doing the lead in, it reminded me the upline used to say, you know, we really don't try to recruit salespeople. Now, they didn't say because we don't sell products, which is actually the real reason that they don't try to recruit salespeople. But they said something like, you know, we're trying to build relationships. We're not trying to, you know, just make a sale or whatever. You know, they would couch it in their own terms. But, I mean, the real reason is because it's very difficult, even for a good salesman, to sell overpriced products. And certainly if you're talking about thousands and tens of thousands of people, to be able to be a good salesman, that's such a, you know, huge ask. It's virtually impossible to expect that. So, you know, that's why Amway and every other MLM I've ever looked at, and there's always going to be groups within a particular MLM that do have retail sales. But I think if you looked overall at the average, if you will, the overall you know, sales level compared to the products that the distributors purchase, it's a very small percentage. And there's no law that defines what the minimum is, but when the FTC has gone after companies, generally they've kind of settled on a 50-50. In other words, if you have at least half of your products being sold to outside customers compared to the internal distributor consumption, then you're a legitimate MLM. And that really, what that does is demonstrates that there's free market demand for the products, and therefore you're not, you know, technically selling an overpriced product. I mean, it might still be pricey, but if you have some sales skills, you can overcome those kinds of things. Now, when it's really overpriced, you have to be really good. And again, I don't think you can do that on a scale across the board. So that's the first problem. And that's not just Amway. It's really every MLM I've ever looked at. And I'm looking for one that has those kinds of retail sales, and I haven't been able to find one. And I'm actually honestly looking for one, and I'm going to keep looking, but I really haven't found one yet. So I think that's either universal or nearly universal in the MLM industry, is that lack of retail sales. Now, certainly not the company when you were doing direct selling, because the salespeople that you recruited were selling those vacuum cleaners to people. You know, they weren't trying to recruit other people to sell vacuum cleaners. They were going and finding customers that were willing to buy a vacuum cleaner. My mother bought one years ago. I don't know where she got it from. And it was, I was, you know, a young kid. I can still remember that canister with the two rails on the ground. And, you know, it was like a blue with a diamond pattern on it. I can remember like it was yesterday. And you probably know exactly what model that is. So anyway, so that's the difference really between direct sales, which is what you did, and MLM. And to me, there's not a legitimate MLM out there, you know, unless I can find one that has at least 50% sales to the outside customers. Now, I've kind of expanded that a little bit because I think it should include the money that's being made from tools. In other words, who cares how much money they make from tools as long as they're making at least half their money from sales to outside customers. So that means if they want to make a lot of money on the tools, then there has to be a lot of retail sales, you know, much more than just 50-50, because now you're including the tool profit in with the overall profit. And I think it should apply to the company too. You know, Amway and other MLMs typically charge, you know, somewhere between 20, 50, 100 bucks to join. And generally that goes to the company. It does not go into the payout plan. It goes right to the company. It's just an administrative fee, essentially. But I think that profit should also be considered part of profit that does not come from retail sales, which is just going to increase the minimum retail sales even more. And that's going to incentivize Amway and other MLMs to either charge less to join or not charge anything. In fact, the UK took Amway to court and then tried to kick them out of the country. And one of the things that Amway agreed to was that they would not charge anything for people to join or to renew, because there's typically a similar charge on an annual basis. So, you know, those are some of the things that are going on in the industry. And like you said, the tools are things like meetings and books. In our day, it was cassette tapes. Before our day, it was actually reel-to-reel. But, you know, then it kind of evolved into CDs, and now it's, you know, MP3 and MP4 electronic downloads, but there's also things like phone apps, there's voicemail, there's websites, there's all kinds of other tools that are sold to the downline, and the upline are making, you know, depending on what level you're at, you might be making two or three times more from the tools compared to your Amway income, or you might be making five times or even 10 times or more. Some people are making tremendous amounts, you know, tremendous multiples of what they're making from Amway. So it's not a large number of people, it's just a large amount of money. And of course, that goes into the overhead of the 99% that are paying into it, because unlike Amway, the tools don't pay out at every level. They only pay out at the very top. Generally, it's the platinum and above. And you can think of a platinum as 100 people in your downline, you know, roughly. So those are the people that are getting the tool profits. So it's all focused at the top. It's very lucrative because the markups on these tools are tremendous. You know, I don't think they have any tool that's not marked up at least three or four times. And sometimes it's even 10 times. You know, the internal production costs. So, you know, tremendous profit margin there on the tools. And that's why they're making that kind of money, because it is focused at the top. So so that's, you know, what we call the tool scam. I call the tool scam, the Amway tool scam. And other companies have similar programs. I don't think any of them are as profitable as Amway's. Herbalife is an example. I'm sure there's others out there, because a lot of these companies were either founded or a former Amway distributor joined them, and of course they put in their tool system. So it's not universal, but it's, you know, not uncommon either to have tool scams. The real common thing is the lack of retail sales, which is really an illegal pyramid. You know, that's really literally the definition of an illegal pyramid. Some people have an issue with the multiple levels of payout being an illegal pyramid, and that's just not true. The FTC has never prosecuted a multi-level marketing company for being multi-level. In fact, they've said very openly that they don't have a problem with that model, and there really shouldn't be a problem with that model. If you compare it to a large, you know, non-MLM sales organization, an IBM or, you know, pick a company that has a large sales organization, you know, Xerox, whatever. Typically there's salespeople, and then there's, you know, supervisors of those salespeople, and then there's an area manager, and then there's a, you know, regional manager, and then there's a national, maybe even an international sales manager. And that's a multi-level structure. The big difference, of course, is that in those companies, those non-MLM companies, that sales organization is selling most of their products to people who are not distributors or not employees, I should say. And so that's, you know, really the key difference between a legitimate sales organization and one that you find in most MLMs, which is mostly internal consumption. And the problem with that is the fact that when you have internal consumption, what you really have is a combination of the old 1980s airplane game, you know, where you join, you pay $1,500, and if you could recruit four people under you, you could be a flight attendant, and then if you could help each of those four get four, then you could become the co-pilot, and if you could help each of those four get four, then you could become the pilot and cash out, you know, for $20,000 or whatever, you know, whatever money is there. And that's a pure play illegal pyramid, you know, just an obvious thing. In more modern times, you know, lately, that's been called a gifting scheme, where you're not on this imaginary airplane, but you're giving money as a gift, quote unquote. It's illegal, but they try to make it sound legal by saying it's a gift. People have been put in prison for this, so it's definitely not legal. But when you have a lack of retail sales, the problem is you have to, you know, compare the products that are being sold by the MLM company to the distributors and the price of those products to something that you can find on the market that's, you know, about equivalent. And then that price difference, you know, the MLM overpriced cost is really the airplane game slash gifting scheme part of the deal. And so, you know, it's just like eating brownies. But if you put X-Lax in brownies, you know, they look the same, but the results are going to be quite a bit different. So that's kind of a, you know, physical comparison, I guess, between, you know, an MLM illegal pyramid and something that people might be more familiar with as far as their experience or things that they may have heard about X-Lax and brownies. You know, it looks good, but when you eat them, it's not very good. So anyway, I'll just let it go at that and let you make any additional comments and we can get on with what we want to talk about this week.
Absolutely. So we may have some newer people that might be listening in. So just to echo some of the things related to Amway, when I was looking at Amway, I was already successful in direct selling. So for those people that don't know my background, I work for the company called Electrolux, the vacuum cleaner company, started off in the management training position, worked my way up to running an area vice president's position. I ran the Midwest area, 96 different offices, 15 different states in my mid-20s. So for those people that are wondering, you know, yeah, I did it all relative to direct sales, and I would consider myself an expert through street smarts and practical purposes as well as being an area vice president corporate stuff on what direct selling was all about. When I joined Amway, Amway was the largest MLM company, so one would make the basic assumption that they're doing everything right. So when I joined Amway, Scott, there was no focus at all on retail selling. It was all transfer buying. So, and I could see how through the recruiting of other people, that didn't happen by accident. It wasn't like these people were lining up like a bakery on a Sunday to buy cookies. Somebody had to do the work to get these things, these people in. So personal consumption counts for something, and that has already been proven by the Burn Lounge case. But there's no focus on retail selling at all. It was all personal consumption. I made the basic assumption. Again, remember, smart guy, top of my game, certainly somebody who, you know, it's not like I inherited the company or inherited position in the company. So when I switched over or started to work on these types of things, no one ever told me that that wasn't the way it was supposed to be. And most people would think, well, how in the world does that happen? By the way, you probably still are asking, how in the world is Amway still able to do whatever they do without any significant retail sales? And that is probably donations to politicians, you know, probably has something to do with it, but that's another story. But the reality is a regular person who's not educated in what a legitimate MLM would be like could join a very quote-unquote reputable companies, maybe even some of them are publicly traded, and still be dealing with something that's somewhat questionable. So having said all those things, Scott, I just wanted to kind of mention that as well, because nobody would ever know it unless we really knew it. Oops. So I'm going to let you finish, Scott.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, most people entering MLM really don't know most of the stuff that we're talking about. They don't understand that that's a requirement in order to not be an illegal pyramid. You have to have retail sales. And unfortunately, there's no law. The FTC has not promulgated any kind of guidance. You know, they've only gone after a handful of MLMs, and they have been generally pretty careful to say, now, this really only applies to this MLM, and it really doesn't apply across the board, which I think is unfortunate also, because, you know, they could be putting out some better warnings, I think, to the industry if they said, hey, this is a key thing. If you don't have at least 50% retail sales, then you're an illegal pyramid and you better get your act together. To me, that would be a very easy thing to say and an appropriate thing to say as well. And you brought up Burn Lounge. I wanted to expand just a little bit on that for people that may not be familiar. When the FTC went after Burn Lounge, I don't know, I guess it's been maybe 8 or 10 years ago now, one of the things that they tried to convince the judge of was that the distributors should not be paid a bonus for their self-consumption, that they should be paid only for retail sales. And that certainly would clean up the industry. But the judge said, no, you know, I'm okay with requiring retail sales, but if you're going to pay a bonus for that, you ought to pay the same bonus to the distributors. And if you think about it, you know, part of the reason for that, I think, is the judge realized there would just be a lot of cheating going on, you know, trying to make everything look like a retail sale rather than self-consumption. You know, he knew better. He knew that people are going to buy their own products, and logically you should, right? I can't imagine being, you know, an MLM distributor, and you go up to somebody and say, hey, would you like to be a distributor or a customer? And the person says, well, what do you think about the products? And your response is, well, I've never tried them. You know, it's kind of silly to say, you know, that you don't need to consume your own products, because you need to get an impression of how well they work so you can talk about them and you know, support them. When I say support them, the products, you know, and so it just makes total sense to me that, you know, what the judge did there was correct, that, yes, you do have to pay bonus for the distributor purchases. It's only appropriate. And so the FTC essentially lost that argument, and I haven't seen them try it again. So, you know, as far as I know, they have not tried that approach again. And that issue is pretty much settled, unless the FTC tries to bring it up again. Again, I haven't seen it. So, but yeah, good points all around there, I think. So, you know, about a month ago, Peter, we did a recording for 2 minutes because the FTC, almost every month, not every single month since January, has been holding a public meeting. It's virtual, but it's available to the public, and you can go to ftc.gov and look up their events or something like that, and go to the calendar and look at the dates. There's going to be another meeting like this next Thursday, I believe it is, and as usual, they have invited the public to make comments. So you can do it live by video or audio, or you can send them written comments, or you can send them a video or audio that they will play during this meeting. It's usually towards the end of the meetings, and they take public comments. And they used to do them for 1 minute, which really isn't even enough room to start an idea. And last month they expanded it to 2 minutes, which still isn't a lot of time, but, you know, you can make a point in 2 minutes. So you did a great favor to me a month or so ago, and You know, when I recorded this message to the FTC, you had your high-tech guy, you know, parse it out and make it a separate file and put it on your, you know, website. And then I could link to it and you know, provide that link to the FTC. Now, last month I didn't make the cut. I think maybe I was, you know, maybe a little too strong. Maybe I... Because they have a lot of different rules. Like, you can't say stuff about, you know, particular individuals or whatever. They have a lot of rules, and I'm not real big on rules. So I probably made a stronger statement than they liked. I guess they still got it. Somebody over there listened to it, just like they listened to my previous months of written comments where I was very strong, and you know, it didn't make the cut, probably because it was too long, my written comments, but still they have it. It's, you know, it's on the record. As far as I know, I sent it to them. I'm pretty sure they read it, and if they just kind of tossed it away, that's on them. That's not me. You know, that's their responsibility. And so I have another message that I'd like to do tonight. And then hopefully this one will make the cut. So,
So for those people listening in, we're going to use this radio show to do Scott's live recording. And, Scott, I'm going to sit here with a stopwatch. How long is the maximum?
It's 2 minutes. I think I can do it in about a minute and a half, maybe a little bit more. So it won't be cutting it quite as close as last time we did this. It's a little bit shorter and certainly more to the point. Of course, this is about my third input to them, and so they're getting to know me at some level and my input. So you know, we'll see where it goes. Maybe I'll make the cut this time. Maybe I won't. I don't think it's a highly viewed website, you know, the FTC. They do provide it, though. You can go on there and look at the, I think it's audios and video, or videos and audios. There's a, you know, a section on the FTC.gov website. And these meetings are all there. They're all posted. You know, they're all public meetings. And you can hear, you know, the commission meeting, and they typically talk about a few topics, and then they open it up to the public. So, you know, I appreciate the openness. I don't appreciate the lack of action, but and that's going to be my main message tonight, basically, is, you know, we can talk and talk and talk, but at some point we need to act, and that's really the theme of this message tonight. So did you have anything else, or I'll go ahead and get started?
You just tell me when you're ready to get started, and I'll kind of push the start button, so this way we can make sure you're under 2 minutes. So you tell me when.
Okay, and this way you can kind of see where we're at as far as time-wise, and
yep.
That'll help find this little clip later on. All right.
25 minutes into it. Here we go.
All right, here we go. Millions of new people in the U.S. alone are scammed and churned out by MLMs every single year and have been for several decades. Most anti-MLMers don't have a clue, and the FTC has mainly talked about the illegal issues, namely the lack of retail sales to outside customers, which is the definition of an illegal pyramid, and in cases of MLMs such as Amway, high overhead costs, which result in secretive and massive profits, 10 times or more compared to the profit from the MLM products being promoted to the top 1% selling their quote-unquote tools to the 99% who lose several thousands of dollars per year and feed these profits. This is RICO fraud. It's not complicated. It's simple. But there is very little action across the MLM industry. Instead, the FTC pats themselves on each other's backs when a small handful of MLM scams are punished, such as Veeam and Herbalife in 2016 and Advocare in 2019. There are well over 600 MLMs in the United States, and every single one that I have been able to examine operate almost identically to these three. The FTC needs to stop talking and start doing, or millions more will be scammed next year. Links to my websites, as to my email, can be found on Facebook at facebook.com. Scott Tex Johnson. As public servants, do your jobs, protect the public, keep your oath, and defend the Constitution against this domestic enemy. You're welcome. And that's it, Peter.
Perfect. Yep, you did it in way less than 2 minutes, about a minute and 30 seconds. Okay, perfect. So for those people that are wondering, where you mentioned where this will be posted, and they do this once a month?
Yeah, they have been doing it pretty much every month. They may have skipped one in the middle, maybe even two, but they started in July when the new FTC commissioner came in, and she's really shaking things up in a good way, mostly, I think. Now, the Republican FTC commissioners have really complain. You know, they say, hey, you're moving too fast, you're, you know, cutting these programs, you're changing these things, and we're not having enough discussion. And quite frankly, you know, I'm a conservative Republican, but I'm fed up with talking. You know, even if the FTC steps on their own toes occasionally with this more aggressive, approach, I think that's better than this almost infinite discussion before we do anything, and it's just ridiculous. A couple months ago, the FTC commissioners, particularly the Republicans again, were patting themselves on the back because they had finally approved the clothing labeling rules, you know, the little label on the back of your shirt or, you know, your pants to tell you, you know, wash this in cold water, don't use bleach or whatever. And it took literally a decade. It took literally 10 years to go through this review process. And the really interesting part is they didn't make any changes. There was a proposal to remove the labels, which to me is a non-starter because, I mean, the lawyers would be crawling all over each other with lawsuits. You can imagine if they took the labels off and then clothing gets damaged and, you know, it would just be a zoo. So, to me, they should have spent not 10 years but 10 minutes discussing that type of a proposal and then moved on. And they also said that, hey, we didn't even take into account any new fabric types, you know, which obviously have cropped up over the last 10 years. And it probably goes back even 20 years you know, since it was looked at in a serious way. So that's just an example of how slow the FTC is, and I wish they would get on the ball and actually do stuff versus talk about stuff. And we need action, because what I just read to you is literally true. You know, there are literally millions of people that join, most of them quit within a year, MLMs every single year, and they're caught up in these illegal pyramids and RICO frauds. And the FTC is just not doing enough, you know, my opinion, you know, going after three in the last 5 years, and there's actually, it's probably four, because, you know, NIOR is another one that's kind of out there, and I guess five Success by Health. That's the one. I keep thinking of Fitness by Health, but yeah, it's Success by Health. So maybe five, but we're talking five in 5 years, and there's 600, over 600 MLMs. So it's just a tiny bit, and they need to come out with some generic rules and say, look, you got to have at least half your products being sold to customers. Now, their excuse in the past, the FTC's excuse, has been, well, you know, we don't want to pin ourselves down. We want to, you know, make sure we keep flexibility. But that really doesn't, you know, confine you in any way. It's just, you know, it's just a marker that says this is a requirement. It's not the only requirement, but it is a requirement. And I've looked at this whole issue and really analyzed it, and determined that the lack of retail sales is actually the root cause of the problem. In other words, that's the most fundamental problem in MLM, and the tool scam is there too. But, you know, it doesn't get any deeper than that. That's the starting point, if you will. A lot of people, like I mentioned earlier, focus on other things, but whatever they focus on, and right now the FTC is focusing more on product claims and income claims, but even those are only symptoms of the lack of retail sales, because, you know, you have to have these outlandish product claims just to be able to have the distributors buy them. You know, forget about customers, but just for the distributors to buy the overpriced products, you have to have some kind of product claim. You know, if you just say, yeah, this is just regular soap, it just costs three times more, you know, who's going to buy that? You have to put a little bit of sizzle on it, you know, and that's, you know, that's not a problem in my mind, because that's salesmanship. But the income claims as well, you know, you have to have some kind of carrot out there that causes somebody to join. And of course, it's a business, so making money is an obvious goal. It's just that when you go overboard with income claims and make it sound like everybody, you know, can be a gazillionaire overnight, then that's going too far. And of course, I'm exaggerating there, but I'm trying to make a point. So it's, you know, those are things that to me are just symptoms of the lack of retail sales. You know, both the income claims and the product claims, in order to get the distributors to join and buy the products. Then you go beyond that to get the customers to buy the products. So, anyway, I'll let you make any more comments, and then we can get back into what we want to do this week.
Nope, it's great information. So let's move on to whatever we want to talk about this week.
I guess we could talk about Marco.
We could.
Our friend Marco. Marco has a YouTube presence. He's on other social media sites as well, but his handle is Always Marco. And, of course, I fondly refer to him as Always Stupid Marco, because he says a lot of really stupid things. And he said a lot more stupid things about, I think it was about a week ago, he did an interview with Robert Fitzpatrick, who's been around a long time in the anti-MLM scene. But he, in my opinion, has just logical flaws. And the main one is that he just thinks that MLM is bad, period, versus MLM is bad if you don't have enough retail sales to outside customers. And so Marco interviewed Robert and did about an hour and I think it was almost an hour and 40 minutes of an interview. And what I did, Peter, was I took the video and I copied and pasted the the audio from it, you know, and then I basically countered each point that they were making. So I'll just do this for a few minutes. We don't need to get to the whole thing because I found that it actually gets quite redundant and repetitive because it's the same theme over and over again, where these guys are just off wandering around, not realizing what the real issues are, and they come up with their own, I don't know what you would call them. I wouldn't call them theories, ideas, I guess. but they're not logical. They're not fact-based. They really can't back them up. It's just their opinion. They have no resemblance to, you know, the FTC record or any, you know, court trial, you know, any kind of precedent that's been done, and it's just off the wall. And I believe that this is a reason why the anti-MLM movement has not been successful, is because they're not focusing on the right things. And unfortunately, Robert is kind of a, you know, a hero now. He's made several interviews on YouTube with different people, and so he's getting more publicity for his ideas, which is unfortunate because now he's kind of making people veer off just like he has for years and really not focusing on the right things. And so I'll let you make any more comments on that, and then I'll go ahead and go through a few of these items.
Sure. So for our Building Fortunes radio listening audience, there's this gentleman. His name is Marco Mukhaber. So if you want to spell Mukhaber, it's M-O-U-K-H-A-I-B-E-R. So Marco Mukhaber has the handle Always Marco. So I was put in front of him as a result of a conversation that you were having with him, Scott. And then he called me on Easter morning at 1 a.m. Eastern time. And I pick up the phone for anybody that calls because we have an international business. And then he kind of did whatever he did, and that's another whole story. But Marco is basically a jerk. So, and needs to be put in his place. And also, in my mind, Scott, is the single focus representation of who I'm going to pick on when it comes to the anti-MLM critics. So there are a lot of them, and many of them need criticism. But here's my challenge, Scott. Some of them are women, young women, old women, women for sure, certainly in a gendered female. And I have a serious problem with kind of not picking on, but it might be perceived as picking on, because I have a daughter, I have a wife, I have a mom, I have a sister, and I have a granddaughter. So I'm kind of, and I'm also a male chauvinist. So that means that I'm kind of give the gals a pass. So many of the gals that are anti-MLM, they do it for views on social media because they found out that if they're talking about MLM, they get a lot more views. Some of them are also entertainers, I'm going to call them. So they're trying to be seen. Maybe they happen to be cosmetologists, or maybe they're models, or maybe they want to be models, but they're girls. And I have a problem, Scott, with picking on girls, or even being perceived as picking on girls. So if they say anything about me, I kind of let that pass because I'm not going to pick on a girl. But Marco I have no problem with. So I don't mind my single focus on picking on an idiot who deserves to be picked on because that's the kind of person he is. Now, the other problem with Marco is he's basically stupid. I mean, this guy is basically stupid. If this sounds like I'm picking on him as far as his personality flaws, there are plenty. He cannot do any research. I'm going to identify some of the things that maybe you mentioned as well with his new mentor, Robert Fitzpatrick. But he is absolutely delusional as far as who he is, who he thinks he is, his potential, when he speaks about himself being good-looking or maybe being cast as the next Batman or maybe somebody who's going to be rich and famous one day. All of those types of things are just delusional because he really, really, really is just a punk. So I say that not to be mean, but just to kind of state the facts, because if you listen to some of his shows, no one that has any credibility would actually align themselves with the type of person he is. He's mostly disgusting. He's certainly fraudulent. He cons his YouTube video listeners into giving them money, which is fine. If they want to give them money, that's their money. It's discretionary income. They can do it fine. He's filled with hypocrisy and contradictions, and we'll talk about some of those maybe when you're doing whatever you're doing. But for those people that are wondering, if you go to alwaysmarco.lol, alwaysmarco.lol, you'll be able to see a little bit about some of the things that he's done before. And again, I just wanted to identify this, Scott, because, you know, some people might wonder, why are you picking on Marco? Marco, for me, is my laser beam focus on the anti-MLM critics, because I don't want to pick on the girls, even though if they probably say things about us that are probably stuff we would want to defend, but I'm just not going to sit there and poke at a gal, because that's not what we do. So I just wanted to say that, and I'll let you comment on that as well.
Yeah, and actually, you know, no one, man or woman, has come after me like Marco has. So, you know, he's the poster boy of anti-MLM. And like you say, a lot of other people have similar views. It's just that he put himself out there and acted very nasty towards both of us. And I'm not a person that backs down. So, you know, that's that. And Marco, you know, was sued by an MLM. And he announced recently he's trying to close it out, which I think means a settlement by the end of this month, you know, November 2021. That may or may not happen. You know, we'll see. But I think what's going to come from that is he's never going to be able to talk about that MLM again, because for the past 2 or 3 months since this lawsuit began, he has not mentioned them by name under direction, I'm sure, of his lawyers, which is smart. You know, don't dig your hole deeper. But I think the settlement will probably include those kinds of things that will, you know, hamstring him from how he behaves. Now, I was also sued by Amway several years ago and settled out of court, but I'm not constrained in that manner. The only constraint I have really is I cannot contact a current or direct a message towards a current Amway IBO, that's what they call their distributors now, independent business owners or IBOs, which is not a big deal. When you think about, you know, there's about, say, 100,000 Amway IBOs at any given time in the United States, and there's, what, 330 million people. That's not a very large population I'm not allowed to direct messages towards. And quite frankly, they're drinking the Kool-Aid, and it's kind of a waste of time anyway, to try to convince them, you know, to get out. So, you know, it makes sense on a number of levels that sort of constraint on me is minimal. It's almost nil. You know, it's almost zero. But I'll bet you that Marco's going to have to agree to much stronger constraints on, you know, even mentioning this company's name again, I imagine. We know what it is because, you know, the lawsuit's been out there on other websites, other YouTube channels. So we know that it's IM Academy, and he made a couple videos about it. And I wouldn't be surprised if those videos come down also as part of the settlement. You know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But, yeah, he's in a lot of financial straits right now. He mentioned on a recent video he owes his lawyers $5,000 more. I don't know how much he's paid him so far. He raised about a $20,000 Canadian with a GoFundMe campaign, but he's mentioned recently, I got to come up with another $5,000, which might be $10,000 by now, right? Lawyers like to feed their families. So anyway, he put himself out there. Now, I don't have as much of a problem as you do criticizing women, but I'm not going to go overboard. You know, I'm going to say, hey, I don't think you're right on this point. And, you know, generally they don't even answer me. That's generally what happens is there's no response at all, which is very different than Marco's reaction. So anyway, because to me, anyone that's miseducating people and not doing things that are going to cause change, you know, good change. And the number one thing is, you know, submitting a complaint to the FTC. You can do that on ftc.gov. It's easy to find the complaint section. And it's right online. You can be anonymous if you want. It's very easy. There's a form to fill out with your particulars. And I always encourage people to write complaints to the FTC, but you have to complain about the right stuff. You can't complain about, gee, my upline told me to work hard, right? They overworked me, or they told me I wasn't working hard enough, or whatever, you know, whatever the issue is. Well, there's no law against that. You know, the laws are directed towards lack of retail sales and hopefully tool scams. The FTC is starting to talk about that a little bit more, not as much as I would like them to talk about it, but they are starting to talk about it, and that's a good thing. But now they need to take action, like I mentioned earlier. So anyway, I generally agree with you. I'm not quite as hands-off, you know, with the women, you know, but I'm not going to go out there and be nasty at them either. I'm just going to say, hey, you're wrong on this, and if you'd spend a little bit of time on certain things, I think it would be a lot more productive. And again, generally, I don't get any response at all. So, you know, that's where it kind of stops usually. So anyway, yeah. You have any more comments?
No, I just want to just basically say for those people that are listening, and it's funny, Scott, because he always beats you up as far as the criticism, saying that you lost $500,000 in Amway. And my specific comment to Marco would be, is Marco, to lose $500,000 to a company, that means you had to at least have $500,000. And he always jokes around about, you know, that bankrupt and broke and losers and whatever. And I'm like, Marco, you just tell me when you made $500,000 in your lifetime and you're 25 now. I ain't seen it so far based on the YouTube videos or the people that you're scamming for donations so far. You probably got about a decade left before you even make $500,000, whether it's U.S. or Canadian, period. So if you consider that a challenge, go for it, buddy. But I don't see that happening. So, Scott, hats off to you. If you lost $500,000, and let's believe you did, and you were still able to raise a family with two kids, that means you had to make a lot more than that to be able to survive. So congratulations, Scott.
Yeah, thanks. Marco, and by the way, they weren't eating beans like Marco said at one point, too.
That's it. So. I don't think you had them stuffed into a one-bedroom apartment either.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, Marco came up with that $500,000. It's probably around half that, maybe a little more than half of, you know, of that 250, 300, somewhere in that neighborhood, because he really severely overestimates inflation during those years. You know, during those years from the mid-90s through, you know, the 2000s, inflation rate was very, very low. Now it's going up more right now. Of course, I got out years ago, but he likes to exaggerate things. And what's really interesting too, Peter, is he gives me a really hard time about losing money. But he was making a video, I don't know, a week or so ago, and one of the things that he said was, you know, he came back to the $500,000 again and feeding my boys beans and everything like that. But then within minutes, somebody made a comment on his live stream, and the comment was something along the lines of, yeah, I have this friend that's been in an MLM for 10 years and they've only made $1,200. And you know, Marco would do as usual, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, his Canadian accent, I'm sorry that you did that. You know, he didn't say, oh, that guy must be really stupid and, you know, blah, 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 blah. He reserved that just for me. I'm the only guy that, you know, deserves that kind of treatment. Everybody else, you know, he feels very sorry for and, you know, gives them a lot of sympathy, but I'm different. So, you know.
Well, let's take your number and cut it in half. I'd still say that Marco at 25 years old certainly didn't make $250,000 in his lifetime earnings yet and probably won't before at least he's 30. So, I mean, I think probably by 35, maybe 32, he might have lifetime complete earnings of $250,000. That's my best guess. You take it, U.S., Canadian. I don't care if you want to call it Zimbabwe dollars. This guy's a loser. So, and scamming don't count. Donations from your goons don't count because that's pity dollars. That's not earned dollars. Or maybe that is. We'll even give suckers like you the opportunity to be able to take those and consider those earnings. If you can scam it, right, Marco? If you can scam it, it's earnings for you. So back to you, Scott. Let's go into your Robert Fitzpatrick interview
yeah,
with Mr.
That.
Marco. Marco Mukabear.
Yeah, so all these comments are timed, right? In other words, I put the timestamp for the comment, and then, or the timestamp, I should say, for what they said, and then my comment. So if you want to go to Always Marco on YouTube and find the interview with Robert Fitzpatrick, it's quite easy to do, and you can actually listen to them say these words, and then, of course, you won't hear my response, and I've been banned from his YouTube channel. That's why we're doing this here. Because I'm not able to do it on his YouTube channel. So, because people who don't want to, or I should say people who aren't confident in their position, they like to block people. That's just the way it goes. And so there you go. So starting right off the bat, this is at time zero, the very beginning. And this is, you know, one of the issues I have with Robert Fitzpatrick is he's really overly dramatic. Not that that's bad, you know, if that's how you want to do your shtick, that's fine and dandy. I'm more of a stick to the facts guy, and I understand that, you know, everyone has their style. And if you can back it up with facts, then go for it. You know, make it dramatic so you can draw eyeballs. But if you're just going to make it dramatic and then your logic totally falls apart and you're just wrong on point after point after point, then all the drama is quite meaningless. So here's the beginning of it. The mission is to get you to believe. This is a mind-controlling cult movement. Okay, so that's how it opens. And my response is, no, it's not a mind-controlling cult movement. It's a lying movement. These are lies, you know, and some of these lies are lies of omission, right? You can lie and say something is false, or you can leave out some important material facts, you know, which is fraud in a business deal. If you leave out, you know, material facts that are important to someone making a good decision, then that's fraudulent. And so I said, no, it's a lying movement. Fitzpatrick, and this is something that I've been thinking about. Robert Fitzpatrick, so against MLM. And, you know, he was scammed back in the 1980s by an airplane game. And that's his only direct involvement in illegal pyramids. I mean, the airplane game really is not even an MLM in my mind, because to me an MLM has to have products involved. But things like the airplane game and gifting scheme, to me, those are not MLMs per se. They're really just a pure money illegal pyramid, you know, a naked pyramid, if you will. And this is my opinion. I don't know what's going through anybody's mind. You know, I can't read a mind, but this is kind of what I came up with. Fitzpatrick is deeply embarrassed. He fell for a naked illegal pyramid called the airplane game in the 1980s. So he has to get hyper dramatic instead of making a simple point. That, I think, is where he's coming from. And I might be wrong, but, you know, that's how he comes across to me, because he's in this really dramatic sort of style. He always exaggerates and, you know, tries to make it sound, you know, really, again, I guess the best word is dramatic, but, but he doesn't have the facts to back it up. That's the problem. So anyway, any comments on that one? I'll move on.
No, but I think a lot of these, like this whole, the concept of like a cult, like in a kind of dream thing, I think it starts to happen over time. So if there is some mind manipulation, it's usually not at the very, 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 very beginning. You kind of have to be open to it, and then they kind of suck you into it as well. So back to you.
Yeah, it's a gradual thing. They don't hit you with the really hard stuff up front. They really can't, right? They would scare you off. So they do start out very, you know, sort of chummy and, you know, very friendly, and everyone likes you, and everyone's shaking your hand and smiling, and, you know, it's a really positive environment. You have to admit that. Now, there's lies behind it, but when you're in it in the beginning, you don't realize that. So it is a very positive environment as far as you're concerned. Now at 11 seconds, again, he goes on with his drama. They try to go for your soul. They're looking to capture your soul because they want you, they want all of you, your whole soul. So again, you know, to me, it's just over the top. And my comment on that one, what does this even mean? They want as much of your money as they can lie and take from you. Simple as that. That's really what they're after here. You know, to sort of go off track and say they want your soul, you know, and all this woo-woo stuff, to me, doesn't serve any purpose, especially if you're not going to back it up with facts later on. To me, it's just a distraction to the real problems. So anyway, let me just kind of skip down a little bit.
Just as a fun tip against Marco, you know, he's an actor. Maybe he should go to Robert Fitzpatrick for acting lessons.
Yes. And they had a good exchange back and forth during this video. I recommend people watch it and get immersed in Marco and Robert Fitzpatrick a little bit. Now at a minute 30, Robert Fitzpatrick says, I've testified in 35 or been served as a consultant or witness in 35 court cases. So that's where he leaves it. My question for him is, I don't think he's ever had a win in a trial. And I'm not sure if he's even influenced an outcome of one of these court cases. He never talks about it. All he says is 35 court cases. But I've never found, and I've looked for a case where he's actually provided some important information, you know, that caused the case to go in the favor of whoever he was testifying for. So again, it's just a sort of a blank claim, if you will. All it says is I've been involved in a lot of court cases. And I think the main reason is because he was one of the first anti-MLMers on the scene. He wrote a book back in the, I think, early 2000s. And so, you know, when you write a book, you're an expert. And once you get, you know, to testify or be a consultant for one case, then you're kind of known and other people, you know, will approach you because, again, that first one is the one that kind of makes you an expert. And he had the advantage of first mover. You know, he was there early. Now, he's wrong on a lot of points, but he was there early, and he kept getting the attention of other lawsuits. So, you know, that's just how it kind of evolved.
He kind of created himself as a result of writing a book. He got some phone calls. I think he was even interviewed by a TV station. Then all of a sudden, he became an expert. So I don't know who read or critiqued his book, but the reality was he became an expert. Then when you're looking up under experts, you find the previous one. So just like I joined Amway, and I really wasn't sure that much about it, I just joined it because of the reputation, because of the size, because I had heard about it before. So Robert Fitzpatrick became a critic of the industry in a very similar way. And what I do know is that if he were in court cross-examined by any legitimate lawyer that could actually cross-examine him, he'd be taken to task on many of the points that you're going to probably bring up during the rest of this call, because a lot of the stuff that he has is just flat-out wrong. And we've talked about that when it comes to things like saturation and the stuff that nobody makes any money selling retail. Any legitimate cross-examination from even somebody that knows something about the business would certainly be able to get him tossed off the stage or the courtroom as being an expert witness. So we never hear about those types of things because those things aren't videotaped like the one with William Keep when Jeffrey Babner did that to him a long time ago, because they just don't videotape these courtrooms. They have them in transcripts. We might be able to see them there. And it's not worth digging out because we don't need to do that. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, in fact, when you did the podcast with Robert about 6 years ago, I think it was, Peter, you know, he made the claim he's never met anyone that's, you know, made a living selling products, you know, with no downline, just selling products. And you said, well, you may not have never met anybody, but I've met a lot of people that have done that. And that was a tremendous pregnant pause, you know. If people go and look up, you know, your channel and find the Robert Fitzpatrick interview, you know, it was one of those really long pregnant pauses. He didn't know what to say. It was several seconds where there was no word spoken. So you could tell he was flustered, you know, when someone
And do you
want to
hear something? Do you want to hear something crazy? Our stupid friend Marco Mukaber, always Marco. Yo, Marco, just recently, when he was criticizing that point, he said something like, I'm paraphrasing Marco, but it sounded something like, well, there's always examples or exceptions to the rule, and just because Robert Fitzpatrick doesn't know anyone personally, you can't hold that against him. And I would say, okay, let me just see if I got this right. Marco, Robert Fitzpatrick isn't just a person. He's a researcher, and he wrote his second book called Ponzinomics. If he hasn't done the research yet to find these people, then he's really not much of a researcher. Has nothing to do with whether he knows them personally or not. You're not talking about a guy on the street. You're talking about somebody who claims to be an expert. Now, Scott, you say he's been at 30 trials, and he writes two books, and he still doesn't know the things that lots of people like me know. Marco, like, how this guy is a mentor of yours. Now, I'm picking on Robert for this specific fact only. I think Robert seems like a nice guy. I don't want to pick on him personally. He's making his living however he's making his living. He brings up a lot of really good points. I'm not softening my position too much on Robert in this example specifically, but there are a lot of good points that he does bring up, but these points that we're highlighting I think are worth mentioning because they are contradictions and hypocritical relative to him as an expert. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, Peter, you know, his favorite thing is saturation, which has been taken to court. There was a 1975 case involving a company called Geromar. That's GERROMAR. And the FTC took them to court, you know, claimed they were an illegal pyramid. And the theory they put forward was that of saturation. You know, you sponsor five, each of them sponsors five, each of them sponsors five. And the judge had none of it. The judge said, look, I'm just as capable of doing the math as you guys are, you know, you guys being the FTC lawyers. But I don't see any resemblance between that, you know, equation, that calculation, and reality. You know, I just don't see five people sponsoring five each. It's not occurring because I guess the company has been around for a few years and they were up to, you know, 3,000 distributors. And he really skewered the FTC lawyers. He really rubbed it in and, you know, made some jokes about, you know, what a flawed piece of logic that is. And it's quite an entertaining read. If you look up Geromar and FTC, you know, I recommend you read the judge's decision because he was really skewering the FTC attorneys saying, look, you know, that's just not a good idea. It's, you know, the math is fine. It just doesn't pan out compared to real life, you know, as far as this MLM. And the FTC tried it again in the 1979 Amway case. And now that judge was actually one of the FTC commissioners. He was in the position of an administrative law judge, and he was a lot nicer. Of course, you know, that was his quote-unquote downline. You know, that was lawyers on the FTC. And so, plus the previous guy had already made the joke, so it'd be kind of, you know, bad form to make jokes again. Anyway, but again, he rejected the idea. He said, look, I don't see this happening. I don't see, you know, five sponsoring five, sponsoring five. And if you've ever been in an MLM, you know that's not how it works. It's hard to sponsor one person, let alone five. And if there's an unusual case where somebody can sponsor five, how many of those five can sponsor five? Chances are it's pretty close to zero. And so the whole idea of this geometric progression is just garbage. I mean, it makes for interesting conversation, but it's just not real. And that's something that, you know, Robert and now Marco and others, a lot of other anti-MLMers, glom onto that, and they don't realize that's not how it works, and it's been rejected not only logically, you know, by anyone that's been in an MLM, but also legally. It's been in the courts. The courts have made a decision, and so it's just not something you want to talk about as far as what's bad about MLM. There's plenty of things to talk about that are bad about MLM, but that's not one of them. And yet, that's what a lot of people focus on, unfortunately. So, there's another point here. This is around 8 minutes and 18 seconds, and they were both sort of patting each other on the back. You know, Marco was saying, you know, oh, you're just my hero and you're a legend and I stand on your shoulders and, you know, just kind of buttering him up. And then Patrick, so I'll read this because it is kind of comical. He said, and this is Robert Fitzpatrick talking, oh, well, thanks for acknowledging that. I'm going to put all the ums and repeats in there. I too stood on the shoulders of other people as well. So yeah, it's a body of knowledge that is built up. And now I think it is more widely dispersed, thankfully. But to many people who want to really get the full picture, that was the idea behind the book. You know, sometimes people don't need the full picture. They just need enough to stay the hell away from it. Yes, but those... Let's see. Yes, but those who are you, the words are kind of, let's see. But those who are whose families have been affected, those lives have been profoundly affected, they may want to know more. Okay. So, you know, they're all just kind of being buddies here saying, oh, yeah, I'm standing on, you know, Robert Fitzpatrick's shoulders. He's a giant. I'm standing on his shoulders, as the saying goes. And, you know, Robert's saying, oh, yeah, I depended on, and I think, you know, Robert didn't say the name, but I think he's talking about John Taylor, who passed away a couple of years ago. And John Taylor was a PhD in something, I think an MBA. So he's got all those letters behind his name. And people automatically think, well, that guy must be an expert, right? But I don't think John Taylor was ever in an MLM either. And he may have been in one for a short period of time. But anyway, you know, the bottom line is what John Taylor, what he focused on was the pay plans and the income disclosure statements and all these things that are really quite meaningless when it comes down to figuring out, you know, whether an MLM is legitimate or not. Because again, it boils down to retail sales to outside customers. And the other thing about doing these really detailed math analyses is that they change the pay plan or the product prices change. Now you got to start all over and do a new calculation to see if it's good or not. And so to me, it's just kind of an exercise of futility and really doesn't prove anything. At the end of the day, it really doesn't show anything. It's just a bunch of numbers and calculations that don't really have a lot of meaning. For example, John Taylor and Fitzpatrick really don't consider the overhead costs. And that's key. You know, if you want to talk about gross profit, fine, but you got to look at your overhead to get down to your net profit to really determine, are you making money or not? Because you know, if you make $1,000, but it took you $5,000 to make it, did you make $1,000? I say, no, you lost $4,000. You know, that's just simple math. So anyway, that's just an example of other things that they are talking about. My response was Fitzpatrick stood on quicksand, and he is quicksand himself. Now, always stupid Marco is standing on their quicksand as well. The story is simple. MLMs lie to the downline and prospects via the lack of retail sales, in parentheses, the exact definition of an illegal pyramid, and tool scams, in parentheses, RICO/business fraud. Also, it's not only staying away from the MLM scams, but telling others to stay away and have them tell others to stay away as well, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, just like the flawed, quote-unquote, saturation model that Fitzpatrick supports. You know, that's what I've always promoted was don't just stay away yourself. Tell other people. Make reports to the FTC. Encourage others to make reports to the FTC. That's how we make change occur. Don't just stay the hell away. That stops the process of educating others and getting more complaints to the FTC. So, you know, to me, that's just bad advice. I mean, you do want to stay the hell away, but don't stop at that point. You know, expand it so that we can actually have an impact. So anyway, that's another point that they were trying to make there that I thought was pretty weak. Do you have any comments on that one?
Nope. You can go to the next one.
Yeah, so there's another one. I'll just skip down. There's one at 11 minutes and 26 seconds. And Fitzpatrick here again is, you know, waxing poetically. And he says, what is a pyramid scheme? Where did it come from? How old are they? Who invented this thing? And what was that power that captivated us? And again, it's just this flowery language. And, you know, I don't even know what that means. You know, and really, who cares, you know, as far as when did it start and who started it? You know, the idea is that you understand how it really works. And that's something that he completely, you know, just strikes out on. He doesn't understand what is wrong with MLMs. He just thinks if it's MLM, it's bad, period. And there's no way you could have a legitimately operating MLM. Now, I have to say this too. You know, last week we had Jason on the show, and, you know, he's kind of a novice guy, doesn't really know a whole lot. He didn't have hardly any experience with MLMs. He was in a couple for like a month each, you know, so he really doesn't know much from personal experience, and he's very much against MLMs, but I don't think he knows why. And, you know, it's really important that you understand why, as far as, you know, what you might find distasteful may not be illegal, and therefore you're not going to get the FTC to go after anything like that. And you know, my position is to force MLMs to have retail sales. And I think that's what happened, you know, with the recent AdvoCare case, where AdvoCare was doing $750 million in 2017, the FTC knocked on their door. They settled 2 years later in 2019. And last year, 2020, the volume went from that $750 million I mentioned down to about $50 million. So we're talking about 7% of what they were. You know, almost zero, not quite zero. But one of the things that they were forced to do, or they agreed to do, I should say, is they got rid of the MLM pay plan. And now they are a direct selling company. So there's no upline, no downline. There's really no need for tools because, again, there's no upline or downline. And you can get your information from the company on how to sell the products. You don't need anybody else to do that for you. In fact, the company would probably prefer to do it because that way they can control the information and not let other people exaggerate, you know, product claims. But that's something that I think if that was done universally, you would see most MLMs, they would either go out of business or they would go to the direct selling model, or if they wanted to stay in MLM, they would have to reduce their product prices a lot. And that means a lot less profit, probably for both the company and the distributors, you know, which may eventually cause the whole thing to fall apart. You know, if the money's not there like it used to be, are people going to stick around? You know, is it worth my time and effort to make a lot less money, you know, that I was making before? I think in most cases people would say, no, it's not. It's not worth the effort. So, you know, people that say, oh, you're not anti-MLM enough, I say, no, I'm anti doing it wrong. Doing it wrong means little to no retail sales and all this hidden profit on the tools. You know, you have to have that transparency on the tool profit as well. And I think if people knew how much money was being made and they did not drastically reduce the prices on the tools, again, people would just leave in huge flocks. There'd be little left. And I think that would be the result by going after this retail sales and also the tool profit transparency, that it would get to the end goal that people want, but it would do it under the conditions of what's actually legal and illegal versus I just don't like it. You know, that's because that's not a legal argument. Oh, I just don't like it. I think you guys are, you know, unfair, whatever. Yeah. Without any real meat to the argument that, you know, I just don't like it. That's what you hear so much without any specific complaint. So anyway, any more comments on that, Peter?
Well, sure, just a little bit. And these are some basic assumptions just used for really bad examples. So I'm going to just say that up front. If AdvoCare built their business to $700 million, you know they did it through their sales force, their recruiting, their personal consumption, all those types of things, but it didn't happen by accident. So that whole concoction that they did built to $700 million in sales. And then when they took that away, technically speaking, it should have all gone down to zero. If it was a 100% pyramid, the whole thing should be zero volume. Now, again, remember I said it's a bad example based on some assumptions here that we're making, but it didn't. Even in spite of laying off their salespeople, who I'm sure, Scott, if you were fired as a salesperson, you're probably not going to continue buying the product from that company. You'll probably buy something else somewhere else. But the reality is there's still $50 million left over after fines, FTC actions, rumors, all the possible bad things that potentially could happen. There was still $50 million for the year left over. So for people like Robert Fitzpatrick and Marco Mukabara and young Jason, who's just a victim of just listening to those two people, there was still some sales going on there, and people were buying the product, and I'm sure if they wanted to cancel, they possibly could have. So there is still a retail demand for some customers. Not the same if you had a energetic, thriving sales force, but the reality was it didn't go to zero. So that doesn't prove anything scientifically, but at least philosophically, I mean, you can definitely draw some analogies there. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, good point. Now, we don't know of that $50 million, how much was the distributor's personal consumption versus retail sales. But again, this is the first year. You know, the settlement was in 2019. We have the 2020 number of $50 million. So it'll be interesting, you know, sometime early next year, hopefully, we'll see what the 2021 number was. And then we can see the year-over-year, you know, post-settlement. So maybe it'll go up. Maybe it'll go up to $75 million. Maybe there will be some retail sales or some extra distributors coming on trying to sell the products. I'm not sure exactly how they market to new salesmen, because there's no incentive there, as far as I know, for the existing, you know, direct sellers. So maybe the company's reaching out for new salespeople to come on board. I don't know. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. You know, that's something that'll be interesting to follow.
So making an uneducated assessment or statement, you would say even fired distributors still buy the product. So again, remember I said that's an uneducated assessment or assumption, but just something stupid to say is even fired distributors still bought the product, as well as retail customers. So, I mean, how much more do you have to say, well, there is some demand for some product somewhere at retail prices. So there you go. So back to you, Scott. What's the next point?
Yeah, no, I mean, exactly. You're right. And if there was even zero sales to outside customers and it was 100% distributors buying it, then in my mind, that is not an illegal pyramid, because, you know, there's no
Yeah, they're customers. There's no retail overrides.
Yeah, they're just customers. Yeah. Well, I think they do get some kind of a discount or maybe even an override on their own purchases. But, again, there's no multiple level to it. So there's really no, you know, factor in there as far as I'm going to buy the products because, you know, that'll cause my downline to buy products. It's really a very personal decision. To your point, you know, they're just assuming there's zero being sold to customers, then there are some loyal, you know, former distributors who are now quote-unquote salespeople. They may not be selling anything, but we'll call them salespeople just to name them. But that's, again, that's legitimate demand in my mind. You know, they think that that product is worth what they're paying for, and there's no other incentive for them to buy that, the key thing. In an MLM, there is incentive for the distributor to buy product, because now you're trying to convince your downline that they need to be loyal like you're loyal to buying the products. And so there's none of that sort of psychological incentive to buy products or overbuy products just to show your downline that this is what they need to do. that's where you get into problems, is with that multi-level aspect of that, you know, lacking the retail sales. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that goes forward. I guess what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, I got a lot of other examples here, Peter, and what I'm planning on doing is putting these on my website so people can, you know, read them and sort of get the gist. But I think I gave enough examples where people can kind of understand, you know, where we're coming from and where Fitzpatrick and all these stupid Marco.
That ringing is Marco. He's calling me twice.
Okay.
He's like, you know, like if you had a girlfriend that's kind of like stalking you. You know what I mean? So he's like, Marco.
He might be playing us live right now on his radio show.
Marco.
Yeah.
Hey, Marco.
He's doing a radio show.
Like a girlfriend stalker. He's like a girlfriend stalker. Like, holy crap.
Oh, and you should have heard the last, I don't know, four or five live videos that he's done ever since he announced breaking up with his girlfriend, Heidi. He has ragged on her every single show. And I'm not talking about for a minute or two. I'm talking about like an hour and just complaining about how everything was wrong with her and, you know, how he, you know, put up with so much and, you know, he was very patient. He tried to change her. He was paying for her to go to a psychiatrist and everything. And he's actually I think he's being tool scammed by the shrinks, because he's a big believer in going and getting, you know, psychological advice, which to me, in most cases, is a waste. I don't believe those people offer much value in most cases. In some cases, they do, but I think they're overused by a lot of people. I mean, Marco's 25. You know, why does he need to see a shrink? But he's a big believer.
Because he keeps calling me. I think he does need therapy. I might have to disagree with you for the first time ever, Scott. I think Marco needs help.
Yeah, he might need it. But he also paid for Heidi's. He paid for Heidi's treatments, too, or, you know, her visits or whatever.
Maybe it worked. Maybe it worked. That's why she dropped him.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's the most handsome guy in the world. He treated her like a queen by his own admission. So, I mean, how could she possibly break up with the world's most handsome man? You know, looked like he's wearing the Groucho Marx glasses, you know, the glasses and nose and mustache and everything, the old Groucho Marx gear, you know what I'm talking about. You ought to see him just on his lives. He's, you know, he likes to put chapstick on his lips. I think he uses a whole tube of chapstick on his, you know, massive lower lip. He's got a massive lower lip. Looks like somebody punched him, but that's natural. I think he uses a whole stick of that stuff every time.
There he goes again. He's still calling me. He's still trying to get in. Yeah,
If it was like last week, Peter, he insists that you're going to answer the phone.
Okay.
And when you didn't last week, I think he was embarrassed because he said, "Now watch this. He's going to answer it. He has to answer it," and you never did. So,
right.
Always stupid, Marco.
He's like a stalker. Like,
he's consistent.
Seriously.
Yeah.
You know the,
no, he's consistent.
You know the challenges, the funny challenges, and I'm not going to throw Jason under the bus. So, I look at Jason as being an innocent victim, but he said he wouldn't talk to you because you didn't have a big enough listening audience. But on Jason's YouTube channel, his YouTube listeners are few. Like, I'm talking very, very few. So the idea that he stooped down and spoke to Jason is very inconsistent. So, Marco, I don't know where you're going, but your channel's going down. Now he's using examples like he's not going to do MLM videos anymore because of whatever, and it's not his passion. This kid is just about as confused as it gets. So, anyways, let's move on. But it's fun to pick on Marco.
I don't want to wear out your ringer from Marco calling in so much. So I wanted to change gears because there's a couple of interesting stories that have been going on, you know, beyond Fitzpatrick and Marco, and our favorite website, at least my favorite one for finding information on news, is called BehindMLM.com, and if you go there, you'll see all kinds of stories, and we only cover a very small portion of them. Many of them are, cryptocurrency MLMs. They're all pretty much the same story. Most of them are pretty small in foreign countries. You know, to me, they're just very repetitive. I mean, it's good to have them because it's a good repository. There's a good search function on this website.
There you
so
go.
If you want to look
calling
up.
Again, Scott. He's calling again. Can you hear the ring? Can you hear the ring?
Yeah.
Or do I have to
yeah, make sure
again?
Make sure we can all hear that ring. Yeah, I blocked him on my phone because he blocked me on his phone, and then he tried to call me back, but he was already blocked. And I tend not to unblock things, you know, especially if you're a total jerk. You know, you get one chance with me, and if you blow it, you blow it. And Marco blew it, so there you go. Yeah, this BehindMLM.com, it's a great way to, you know, look up somebody's name or a MLM company name and find out what the history is on them. So it's just a really good website for information. And I wanted to cover a story that came out November 12, 2021, and the headline is Why OneCoin's Konstantin Ignatov Traveled to the U.S. So this is the guy that was the brother of the founder, Ruja, of OneCoin, and he was arrested, I guess, was it a couple years ago? It says March 2019. He was captured on the West Coast, and he's been in jail ever since.
One more time. Yeah. I can't believe this guy.
He was recently caught lying. It was kind of a minor point, but you know, when you're a witness and you're giving testimony against another defendant and then you're caught lying, the government tends to say, you know that deal we had? It's off. You know, because that's generally part of the agreement is, hey, we're going to take it easy on you, even though we should throw the book at you. If you cooperate and, you know, and we can nail some other people, then we'll go easy on you. But you got to tell the truth. If you don't tell the truth, the deal's off. And so I don't know what, you know, the exact deal was. I don't know what the government's position is, but I think this guy's in really bad position. And it's got a picture of him with a very Marco-like look on his face, just sheer stupidity. He's standing in front of the Hollywood sign. Now, this isn't Marco. It could be Marco because Marco wants to go to L.A. soon. He's been talking about that on the show, too. But he's standing in front of the Hollywood sign there in California, you know, with this really stupid grin on his face. He's got tats literally on his entire body. Well, I don't know about the entire body. I haven't seen him without underwear on. But it goes up all the way up his, you know, torso, all the way up to his chin. And his entire neck, you can see his entire neck is tattooed. And I've seen other pictures of him where I know all of his arms and legs are tattooed. I mean, the guy is just, you know, top to bottom, except for his face, basically. He's wearing a baseball cap kind of sideways, kind of stupid looking like Marco. And so anyway, it's just kind of a story about, you know, why did he come to the United States? And the opening sentence here on the story is, was it ignorance, a false sense of security, stupidity, or a case of all three? And I'm thinking, man, that describes Marco perfectly. But this guy is pretty much equally stupid because he really shouldn't have come in. You know, if he had any kind of intelligence, he wouldn't have entered the country because he's been in jail now ever since. And there's Marco.
Marco's gone again.
So anyway, I don't know if you have any other comments on that story, but I have to get to a OneCoin story when there's one available.
Yeah, no.
Peter,
That was funny because if you see the goofy picture that this guy's got, I mean, this guy's just stupid as a stupid does. So he comes to the United States. They confiscate, but he thinks they lose his wallet. All of his luggage. And they say they lost my laptop. They took my phone, whatever. They basically confiscated everything, basically like, you know, getting all the evidence as possible. And he was complaining about that and then boasting that he still had a great meeting with his people in his sweats. He said, I was more productive in my sweats than I was in the suit, than, you know, in the suitcase that they stole from me. So it was pretty funny. But stupid is as stupid does.
Yeah, it's really
I'm telling you, between him, Marco, and Trayvon James, I think we got him in an all one. If we could get them all in one room at one time, that'd be just perfect. So Marco's calling again.
And those three would make the Three Stooges. They make the Three Stooges look brilliant. I mean, you know.
Yep.
So there's another interesting story here that I wanted to get to. It's November 10th, 2021, the story is. And the headline is Montana to prosecute and fine unregistered MLM companies. And Montana's been one of those states that's been a little bit more aggressive against MLMs and done things over the years, you know, to protect their citizens of their state, which is nice. But apparently there's only a handful that are currently registered, and they have an amnesty, you know, a certain period of time. I think it's like a couple weeks or a month, something like that, where if they're not registered, then Montana is going to prosecute them and fine them for not being registered. So, you know, some interesting developments there. I think all states should do that, to be honest with you. You know, because registering doesn't prove that you're legitimate, but what it does do is it identifies you as being present in the state, you know, whatever you're talking about, Montana in this case, you know, doing business in the state, and the contact information. You know, what's the name of your company? What's the website? How do I get a hold of you? You know, if I have a question or a concern, you know, email, telephone, whatever, and you better make it legitimate contact information or you'll be in trouble again. So, you know, it's one of those things. It's a good move. So any comments on that?
Nope. Hopefully it'll help them get rid of some of the bad ones. It's a little bit on the tough side. If you're a newer company and you're trying to shoestring your company, if you have to register in every single state, it's pretty tough because, you know, it's 50 different states, it's 50 different pieces of paper. You're probably going to need a lawyer, an attorney. It's probably going to cost anywhere from $10,000, $15,000 if you try it on your own, up to $50,000 or more if you're going to have like an MLM attorney do it. So the challenge with that is it really does eliminate the small startups from even getting started if they're trying to do something. So I kind of have mixed feelings one way or another because now it's like only big businesses or people with a lot of money can start up their own MLM, just like starting up their own direct sales company. They'd have to register in every state. Or, you know, it's that's kind of like one of those I have kind of mixed feelings on. So what it does is it kind of alienates the good people from getting started sometimes too. So it goes both ways.
Yeah, I don't know offhand how many states require registration or not. I mean, there's usually, you know, like a Secretary of State, I think is what it's called in most states, where you have to register your business. I mean, that's
right.
Whether it's MLM or non-MLM, you know, generally you have to register your business. So I don't see it as an unusual or excessive requirement. And I think it's pretty straightforward. You know, it's not like show us all your books. It's, you know, what's the name of your company? What's your phone number? What's your email? And that's pretty much the extent of it. So there's Marco
calling in. Marco's calling in. She's recording this.
Yep. So
she's recording this for the lawsuit, Marco. Just recording this for the lawsuit.
There you go. And I guess we're about at the end of our time here. But I'll do one
yeah.
more, if you don't mind, Peter.
Sure.
It's November 3rd, 2021 story. The headline is Judge Suggests Frank Ricketts Pleads Guilty in OneCoin Trial. So this is, again, OneCoin. And Frank Ricketts was one of the main players, and it's in Germany. So, you know, it's German law. It's not U.S. law. So I don't know some of the inner workings of the German courts. But basically what the judge is telling this guy is, look, we're just starting the trial, and if you plead guilty, then I'm going to give you a lesser punishment than if this trial continues and it shows that it's, you know, really, you know, the evidence is really stacked against you and, you know, you're found guilty, I'm going to make a much harsher penalty compared to if you just admit it now. You know, that's basically, you know, what the judge is telling this guy, this defendant in Germany. And so it's kind of an interesting situation because I don't think that kind of exchange occurs in the United States. I think the principle is there. But I don't think it's openly talked about like this, you know, where the judge is talking to the guy going, hey, you need to come clean or it's going to get worse for you. You know, it's not talked about like that. The judge in our country is more neutral and impartial and lets the lawyers on both sides work it out. Now, at the end of the trial, you know, if it's obvious that the person is guilty, the judge may give him a more severe sentence because he did tie up the court for a long time, and it was obvious he was guilty. And, you know, judges don't like to have unproductive time. They like to get their cases in, get them out, because they usually have a big backlog. So, you know, that's just kind of the way it works. So, yeah, this is interesting. We'll have to see what happens in Mr. Ricketts. But any more comments on that one?
No. But and I think there's probably going to be even more OneCoin arrests, if you will, or maybe even future trials, and maybe hopefully they go into some of the other companies where the OneCoin distributors fled, if you will, and now they might be still doing the same thing somewhere else. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, no, exactly. I was just kind of scrolling down here. There's one more in here that I thought was interesting. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago before it made it into this website. It's dated November 2nd, 2021. The headline is FTC sends 379 MLM companies deceptive/unfair conduct notices. So these are those notices saying, hey, we're warning you, and if you break the rules, we're going to fine you up to like $43,000 per incident. You know, so if there's 100 emails or 100 websites or whatever, then each one of those counts as a violation, and it could be up to $43,000. You know, it adds up very, very quickly, you know, to a major fine. Now, what I noticed in this when I was reading the list was there were several of the Amway tool scam companies listed. I'm trying to remember the specific ones. I think it was Worldwide Dream Builders, LTD, Leadership Team Development, and there was one other that I came across, and I can't think of it off the top of my head. But the two of them that were not in there, that were not on the list, are two of the older ones, and I think they just know how to phrase things better so that they don't get the attention of the FTC. And that is the Dexter Yeager tool scam, and they go by different names. Sometimes they use the Yeager name. Sometimes it's Internet Services. They use IBO City. They have different names, but it's the same company, basically, the same tool scam company. And the other one is Brit Worldwide, BWW. Those are some of the older organizations, and I don't know how they got under the radar of the FTC, because there are also a couple of the larger ones. But maybe when they went to their websites, they didn't see anything that was as, you know, over the edge or whatever of the other ones. I'm planning on sending the FTC, you know, an email saying, hey, you forgot these two tool scam companies. You mentioned some others, but, you know, you left out a couple others that are major. You know, they're not just little companies. They're big companies in the tool scam industry with Amway. So anyway, I guess that'll wrap it up for me. If you have any comments on that, Peter, go right ahead. And otherwise, I'll turn it over to you to close out for the week. We'll talk to you again next week.
Nope, all sounds good. And the FTC is certainly doing all the things that they need to be able to fine or go after the companies that they want to go after. So no one's ever going to say that they didn't give anybody any kind of warning. So there have been more, you know, any complaints that we've had before, Scott, about them not really taking any action. They're at least doing more, you know, demonstrating the ability to do some action, more so now than ever before. And we'll see where this actually goes. So it's going to be very interesting. Now, there was on TINA.org, I'll just kind of leave it at this. It is having an impact on a lot of companies. On TINA, truthinadvertising.org, I saw an article that they had posted about USANA, which is a publicly traded company who took down a lot of posts and articles or whatever that might be considered income claims or medical claims. So USANA made some pretty big action as far as taking this kind of awareness seriously. So if you look at truthinadvertising.org or TINA.org, you'll be able to see some of those comments they made about USANA. So it's having an impact. So whether they actually do anything directly or indirectly, it's having an impact. So we're going to do this. We're going to catch everybody next week. Scott, do you want to give out your website one more time?
Yeah, let me give out my Facebook, because you'll find my three website links as well as a link to this show and my YouTube link on my Facebook page. So it's facebook.com/ScottTexJohnson, all one word, ScottTexJohnson. And you can find everything right there in one place. And my email. Put my email up there if someone wants to communicate like that. And I also, you know, we'll talk to them over the Facebook voice app. That way, you know, both of our phone numbers are confidential, yet we can communicate verbally. So there's lots of ways to get a hold of me, and you're welcome to do so. And other than that, Peter, I appreciate you continuing the show. It's been fun, and it's been extra fun since Marco came along, I have to say.
And 11 times, Scott. He's called me 11 times on this.
Okay.
On this, yeah, 11 times. You know what? I've had disgruntled girlfriends call me fewer times. I've had some disgruntled girlfriends call me way more than that. So he hasn't made the record yet, but I'm not asking you to, Marco. But the reality is, you know, I don't get it. So we're back. We'll be back next week. If you go to buildingfortressradio.com/Scott-Johnson, you'll be able to hear this as well as previous radio shows. We'll see you next time. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Building Fortunes Radio on buildingfortunesradio.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for the designated Building Fortunes Radio segment with Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website for our featured segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. At Building Fortunes Radio, we wish you the success you deserve and are willing to work for. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.